Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
The Czech government has set price caps for electricity and gas. The Supreme Court overturns the verdict for a man accused of fighting with pro-Russian separatists. And US actor John Malkovich will present the world premiere of his next one-man show in Prague. In the face of soaring power prices, the Czech government has set caps on electricity and gas for small consumers. The new prices will apply to deposit payments from November. Electricity will cost a maximum of 6 crowns per kilowatt hour, while in the case of gas, it will be 3 crowns per kilowatt hour. The state has earmarked 130 billion crowns to cover the scheme. Opposition leaders say the move comes too late and that power prices will still be too high. The government is due to announce its price cap system for businesses on Wednesday. The trial of ex-Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, who is facing charges of fraud in connection with the Stork's Nest Conference Centre near Prague, had its second day of hearings on Tuesday. The second day of the trial began with Judge Jan Schott reading several witness statements. According to the Czech news agency, Mr. Babiš left the morning hearing satisfied because, he said, the witness statements showed that the accusation against him is false. In the afternoon, the court heard testimony from a handwriting expert who stated that a signature on the deed for the acquisition of shares in the company, allegedly from Mr. Babiš's son, is probably not genuine. Mr. Babiš and his former adviser Jana Nagyova are accused of falsely creating the impression that the Stork's Nest company, which was connected to Babiš's conglomerate Agrofert, met grant conditions as a small or medium-sized business in order to unlawfully acquire around 50 million crowns in EU subsidies. Both defendants face 5 to 10 years in prison. The Czech Supreme Court overturned the verdict of the Prague Municipal Court on Tuesday, which had sentenced Alois Polak, a man accused of involvement in fighting against Ukraine, to 20 years in prison. The Supreme Court approved both the prosecution and defense's appeals against the verdict and ordered the case to be reopened. Mr. Polak, who is being tried in absentia, stands accused of taking part in a terrorist attack and being part of a terrorist group for fighting with pro-Russian separatists in Ukraine between 2016 and 2020 and killing at least 4 Ukrainian soldiers. Czech courts have already dealt with several similar cases this year. The interest rate for new mortgages rose to 5.76% in August from 5.42% in July, according to data from the Czech Banking Association's Hypermonitor. The rate is now the highest it has been since the beginning of 2010. Interest in mortgages is also decreasing, with a drop of 15% compared to July. The year-on-year decrease in applications for new mortgages rose to 78%. The number of registered new COVID-19 cases in Czechia has increased by over 3,000 in one day for the first time since the start of August. On Monday, 3,288 new cases were recorded, which was an increase of about 500 on 7 days earlier. Infection rates have been increasing for 8 days in a row. Some 728 people were in Czech hospitals with the coronavirus on Monday, a fall of 41 on the same day last week. The number in a critical condition remains around 30. Acclaimed US actor John Malkovich will present the world premiere of his one-man show, the infamous Ramirez Hoffman in Prague, the Czech news agency reports. Malkovich will perform the play in English at Prague's Congress Center on November 11th and then take it on tour. Malkovich will perform accompanied only by musicians, just like in his play The Music Critic, which he performed in July this year in Kroměříž in southeast Moravia. The play is based on the last chapter of the book The Distant Star by Chilean author Roberto Bolaño. The book, considered by literary critics to be one of Bolaño's most important works, is a story about an artist who cares only about aesthetics rather than ethics. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Wednesday will continue to be overcast with rain expected. Daytime temperatures should drop to between 15 and 19 degrees Celsius. My name is Anna Fodor, and that's the end of the news, but stay tuned for a closer look at some of today's top stories.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. Here's what's coming up in today's programme. We look at whether inflation in Czechia has hit a culmination point after the first registered slowdown in 13 months. Also, we look at the movie Il Buemo, which has been selected as the Czech nomination in the Best International Film category in the Oscars. And later, we speak to the Czech ambassador in Canada, Botek Lizec, about Czech prospects to secure Canadian energy and the Volinian Czech community in the prairies. All that is coming up, so please stay with us. Czech year-on-year inflation slowed in August from 17.5% in July to 17.2%. This followed 13 months of continuous rises. Obviously, inflation is still very high, but does this mean that the Czech economy has finally turned a corner? I asked Ceres Bank chief economist Vít Hraňil.
Among analysts, everybody did expect month-on-month inflation rate to go down quite significantly. And what I mean by that is by how much August was more expensive than July was, so that the month-on-month rate. Everybody kind of knew that this was going to go down relative to previous month, but the drop at the end of the day was much more significant than we had thought, which then resulted in the year-on-year inflation rate, the most famous one, which is the 17.2, going down as well. So that part was a surprise, and to a large extent it was based on prices of fuels. Those dropped quite significantly, much more so than we thought they would.
Do we know why the fuel prices fell by such an amount, or are we still not sure?
Well, a lot of it relates to the development on global oil price, oil market, obviously, but that's probably not the whole story. There has been a lot of controversy regarding just how much higher the margins on, you know, fuel prices are in the Czech Republic, and whether there is some kind of collusion or cartel deal going on. And since that attracted a lot of media attention, you would probably expect the fuel dealers to rather remain on the cautious side and maybe push the prices lower a little bit more than they would otherwise.
Many analysts have warned against interpreting the data as a culmination point, after which inflation will start to noticeably recede. What is your opinion on that? Do you think we've sort of reached the limit now?
Whoever says that is absolutely correct. If you just do a little bit of a mental exercise that I just did earlier, then you will see that even if in the hypothetical scenario, even if everybody stopped raising prices altogether from now on and nobody raised the price by a single crown until the end of the year, then the year-on-year inflation rate, the one that we watch the most closely, would still end up at around 15% by the end of the year. So even if this were the case, meaning nobody would raise their prices, we would still see just quite a slow and cautious drop in the overall inflation rate. Now, the reason for that, obviously, is because we're comparing ourselves to the previous year, where prices were just much lower. So it's not going to be the case that inflation will drop all the way to like single digits or something like that. That's not going to happen. Also, the scenario that I just explained is super optimistic. It includes nobody raising prices at all, which is definitely not going to happen. So even if for the rest of the year we see quite a modest price increase in each month, it's reasonable to expect the year-on-year inflation rate to remain somewhere around the current levels, which is about 17%. On top of that, there's still this energy drama going on, and it doesn't seem to be stopping anytime soon. So since energy prices only slowly get into the inflation calculation as more and more households, their long-term contracts expire, and they renew them for higher prices, that leads to higher inflation every month. And moreover, even in the firms, obviously this translates into higher costs, which then necessarily are transferred into consumer prices. So there's very little hope of inflation like dropping significantly anytime soon, and I wouldn't bet on that for sure.
Nevertheless, you were saying around 17%, so I guess that sort of dreaded line of 20% is unlikely to be crossed this year, right?
Yeah, most likely not, because initially everybody thought that the 20 will be breached. Now it seems unlikely, and I think that's mainly due to the fact that there's really two different kinds of inflation. One is demand-driven, meaning people want to buy more, and hence prices go up. And then the other one is like cost-driven inflation, meaning it's more difficult to produce stuff, and then it gets more expensive. So the demand part of inflation is actually dying down much faster than we had expected, and that's mainly because of the pretty significant drop in real incomes of Czech households and very quickly deteriorating economic sentiment. So our households no longer are willing and able to tolerate and put up with higher prices, and we see that in those like demand-specific categories such as restaurants, hotels, clothing, footwear, and so on. So this is dying down very quickly, meaning households no longer are willing to put up with higher prices, and that pretty much caps inflation at what cost-driven, meaning for the most part energy-driven, and that's going to be the driving factor for the rest of the year.
In which sectors do you see the biggest prospects for continued rise in prices? You know, is it just energy, or, you know, would there be some sectors that you'd pick out and tell our listeners what to look out for?
It's definitely energies, which obviously falls into the housing category. So there is going to be pretty tough, not only for the rest of the year, but I would safely assume that even next year. The other one to look out for is probably food. But here there has been some positive development over the past couple of months. Not only is price dynamics slowing down in the Czech Republic, but also if you look at the global market for food or agricultural commodities, there has also been some pretty positive development. And this usually with a little bit of a time lag, usually it's estimated at around half a year, this then translates into lower prices in stores, even in the middle of Europe. Unless something even worse than we have seen so far regarding geopolitical situation erupts there, even foods should calm down. So I really do think that the only problematic category for the remainder of the year will be housing, or more specifically, energy.
And you were listening there to Cyrus Begg, Chief Economist, Vít Hradil. And moving on to culture now, Il Buemo has been selected as the Czech nomination in the Best International Film category in the Oscars. Petr Václav's movie tells the story of composer Josef Myslivecek and will get its world premiere at the San Sebastian Film Festival this weekend. Ian Willoughby has this report.
Giuseppe Myslivecek.
Myslivecek.
Il Boemo, which translates as The Bohemian, looks at the life and career of the 18th century composer Josef Myslivecek. The Czech found great success in Italy in the opera seria genre and was a mentor and friend to Mozart before later dying of syphilis in relative obscurity. The film was written and directed by Petr Václav.
We focus on his story, his rise and fall. It doesn't include his childhood and so on. The main focus is on his life as a composer or as somebody on the path to a career as a composer.
Il Boemo stars the Czech actor and musician Vojtěch Dyk. He told Czech radio that not speaking the language, he'd been forced to learn the mainly Italian language script phonetically.
There is one scene in Czech when he meets his twin, but I also play that role. There's also a scene in German with Mozart. It was a huge experience for me. I had to learn the entire text off by heart because I don't speak Italian at all. Every free moment at home, I was blathering away in Italian, or at least an approximation of Italian.
The drama was filmed at several locations in Czechia, including Prague's Estates Theatre, Martinitz Palace and Colorado Mansfeld Palace, as well as two cloisters and other spots outside the capital. Some key scenes were also shot in Venice, as Vojtěch Dyk recalls.
We got up early and the whole of Venice was filled with fog. For me, it was one of my greatest experiences in any city. We were there at 5 a.m. on a period gondola. There were no people about and I had an amazing experience of empty Venice. It's indescribable.
Il Boemo naturally features the music of Josef Myslivecek. It's performed by the acclaimed Czech Baroque Orchestra Collegium 1704, whose leader Václav Lux is the film's music supervisor. As for the style of the picture, director Petr Václav has cited Stanley Kubrick's Barry Lyndon as a definite model. He also says Miloš Forman's Amadeus, itself shot in large part in Prague, was an inspiration. Amadeus earned no fewer than 8 Academy Awards, and the Czech Film and Television Academy may have had that incredible success in mind when they selected Il Bohemo as the country's nomination for Best International Film in the Oscars, despite the fact that it hasn't yet been screened publicly. A short list of 15 works in that category will be announced in December, while the actual nominees will be revealed in January. The Academy Awards ceremony takes place on February 24th. Il Bohemo will get its world premiere at the San Sebastian International Film Festival on Sunday and will enter Czech cinema distribution on the 20th of October.
Just a reminder that you're tuned in to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio, where it's now time for our main feature of the day. Bořek Lizec is not just Czechia's ambassador to Canada, but also a man on a mission to track down the history of the many Czech communities in North America. He was recently in Prague, in fact last month, at the annual meeting of Czech ambassadors. And he took the opportunity also to visit Radio Prague International Studios to talk about Czechia's search for Russian energy alternatives, as well as about his encounters with Canada's Volhynian Czechs. I spoke to him and began by asking what it's like to be an ambassador during a time of significant international tension brought about by Russia's aggression against Ukraine.
I certainly feel that the current situation in the world that has, since the Russian brutal attack on the Ukraine, that goes against those values that we certainly, both Czechs and Canadians, believe in, has changed something. And I feel that diplomacy once again has become something that I knew more from those old publications, when diplomacy was really about mattered in terms of lost life, in terms of even survival of countries, including our own country. So I feel that, certainly feel that responsibility. That is something new, I think, in my profession.
It's interesting. Last year, I was asking you what it's like to be an ambassador during the COVID pandemic. Now I'm asking you this. I wonder what I'll be asking you next year.
That seems a little bit frightening.
In any case, you know, Canada, of course, is a major producer of crude oil, and it's also the fifth largest producer of natural gas. Prime Minister Petr Fiala asked ambassadors to look especially at questions of energy diplomacy to his ambassadors in his speech earlier this week. Are there any matters in this regard in terms of energy cooperation that Czechia is currently looking into with Canada? And if not, why is that?
It is certainly a very important topic for me and for the Czech Republic. The enormous natural resources wealth in Canada. So we are certainly aware of that, and in that we are certainly not an exception. The whole European Union has been discussing all possible opportunities with Canada, how they can help us with the current energy crisis. And also we have to look at it in a longer term. We want to for sure become independent on Russian oil. That's our now final long-term vision. So we also don't look at the immediate situation, but also in the longer run. And so in both respects, we have been talking to our Canadian friends how they can help. The biggest challenge is in the short-term scenario, how they can help us in the current crisis, especially when we talk about this winter, for example. The problem is that Canada has basically no infrastructure how to get natural gas from the prairies in the west to the east coast. So that is a big problem. Canada has been focusing its future in terms of export of energy to the West Coast, to Asia. And as some of the listeners might note, there was also a setback in terms of strengthening the capacity of Canadian exports of energy, of oil and gas to the United States when the Keystone XL pipeline was cancelled at the beginning of the term of the current U.S. president. So everything now, of course, is on the table. I'm sure Canada is looking into all options how to help us as quickly as possible. So as again, your listeners might have heard, currently the German Chancellor was in Canada. So I think it is also important for Canada that we look at the changes that we need to make in terms of preventing global warming. This is something that European Union and Canada share. So that is what I started to talk about, also this long-term perspective. So for that, for example, the ability of Canada to contribute with hydrogen, green hydrogen, that means hydrogen that would be produced from renewable resources, for example, especially wind energy in the East Coast.
You know, I do feel I have to ask about this because you were telling me, you know, of course, this week you're in Prague along with the other ambassadors of the Czech Republic to various parts of the world. You know, what do they say when it comes to negotiating perhaps, you know, energy deals? I was just curious, you know, because you must have met so many people now. They've obviously been discussing this.
I think the critical term is an energy crisis. So I think this is why what you already said, our prime minister said this as an important priority for the diplomatic corps. So basically now we are being given as diplomats this mandate and this task to each of us look into options, try to communicate with our government and try to come up with longer term and the short term solutions.
And what about security? Can there be any cooperation in terms of security between the EU and Canada, especially Czechia and Canada? Or?
For sure. This has been already quite intensive. The First Deputy Chief of Staff of our Army visited Canada this spring, actually in June. So there is an intensive communication between our armies. This also is related to the fact that Czech soldiers and Canadian soldiers have served side by side in protecting Latvia for several years now. The Czech soldiers are under Canadian command in the so-called Enhanced Forward Presence NATO mission in Latvia. So this has a huge impact in terms of working together, in terms of how our armies are able to work together. Also, there are other projects between both armies. We have Canadian representative to our CBRN Operation Center of Excellence in Vyškov. I could name some more.
Okay, to go a bit on a lighter topic, you were speaking of the difficulty for Canada of moving resources from the prairies to the East Coast. You, of course, visited the Canadian prairies. I don't know if you were looking on how to solve that question, but you certainly were visiting Saskatchewan and Manitoba, where you visited the local Czech community. So I was wondering what you learned about the Czechs in the prairies.
Yes, there is certainly more that I learned. And these are, again, some fantastic memories. This time I visited Manitoba, Saskatchewan. I would say that what is interesting is that I confirmed what I thought would be the situation after reading the literature, the old books that were written, if only few, unfortunately. And so significant number of the old historic Czech communities actually consists of people who came, of Czechs, who came from Volhynia. So in the prairies, this is particularly apparent. And I can share with you and the listeners one story that I went to a relatively a community that is relatively in the north in Manitoba. It's called Minitonas. Because of their contribution, there was a substantial contribution during the Second World War. And this community is actually a community of people who left Czech Republic or the Czech lands at the time in the early 1700s. And they went through Germany and Poland to Volhynia. So they are so-called emigrants of after the Battle of the White Mountain.
To Volhynia?
So they stayed in Volhynia for a long time. Then they moved to Canada. So it's now basically more than 300 years. And I was really surprised that this particular community spoke the most Czech language from what I have seen. And what was, I would say, even shocking experience was that the leader of the community, his name is Jerry Vítězslav Marek, spoke Czech like any Czech in the Czech Republic. You would not be able to say that he wasn't born here. It has been typical for Czech Canadians, even in the later generations, that the Velvet Revolution was an important milestone for them, and many of them decided to go to the Czech Republic to, at that time, or Czechoslovakia, to help to get the country back on its feet. And this was also the case of Jerry Vítězslav Marek, who came here to teach with his wife, to teach English and help through that to our country. So that would be one experience, but of course I had many other Volinian Czechs whom I visited in a community called Gerald, which actually arrived before the end of the 19th century, and they were telling me many stories how important Czech heritage is still interesting for them. What caught my attention was that they were asking each other if they still plant in their gardens the poppy seed, and they were telling each other how they are making it, as they said, as smooth as possible by keeping some old instruments, how to do that.
Given that they are Volinian Czechs, so Czechs who at least at some point would have lived in Volinia, today's Western Ukraine, did they ever talk about the conflicts? How did they feel about it?
I think they certainly have that. And I would say in general, for Czechs with our history, this is a very difficult situation in terms of these terrible parallels, historic parallels, of course, with Russian invasion of 1968, of taking a sacrifice, losing part of the country, and then the promises of the aggressive leaders not being kept. Like Adolf Hitler didn't have enough when he carved off the Sudetenland from Czechoslovakia. The same with Vladimir Putin after Crimea was not enough for him, in spite of what both of them were saying originally.
So that's the sort of connection they made. I was just curious because, I mean, based on what you're saying, it sounds like they, of course, have very close connections to Czechia. But, you know, given that their ancestors also lived in Ukraine, if they sort of felt any connection with Ukraine, or was it just this sort of parallel between Czechoslovakia being invaded? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, certainly. I understand that. I think that, yes, with the Volinian Czechs, there is, of course, a stronger attention, a sentiment to directly having a direct link to the Ukraine and to those parts which are now under siege. On the other hand, they always consider themselves Czechs and were also leaving. I would say what plays a role is that often the ultimate impulse for them to leave was the Bolshevik Revolution. So they were leaving under a lot of stress, sometimes maybe after many decades when they were building something, the future for their children, and then they realized that everything was lost and taken away from them. So there are some bitter memories also from the past related to their stay in Volinia.
And Botek Glizec will also be our guest in next week's Sunday Music Show. We will look at his latest project celebrating the 110th anniversary of the birth of Czech-Canadian pianist Jiří or George Draxler. And you can find more information about that project, including a booklet with a history of Czech Canadians that features many unique images, on the website www.draxler110.cz. And that interview brings us to the end of today's programme. From me, Tom McEncrow, and the whole team here at Radio Prague International, we wish you a lovely day and hope that you tune in again tomorrow.